been one of the authors of this report, you know, this huge compendium of what happened in Canada, and it touched every single aspect of our society. It tore at the fabric of who we are as a people. And you have a tendency when you're considering something of such broad proportions of focusing on those things that perhaps affected you directly, those things at the top that are shiny, and those things at the top that are easy. You know, we can blame it on the government, we can blame it on the doctors, we can blame it on this. But the fundamental thing that has come to my mind on this is that we are to blame.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Freedom Feature. I'm your host, Barry Bussey. With me today, we're continuing our conversation as Ken Drysdale, who's chair of the commissioners of the NCI. And Ken, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for being brave enough to have me back on a second time.
Well, Ken, listen, we were talking about the relief valve of the NCI and its importance for Canadians to be able to express themselves when they were so shut up for so long and actually shamed and blamed and you name it. But my book, 210 degrees Celsius, 16 ways the truckers ignited Canada for the long haul. And the reason why I entitled it 210 degrees Celsius, actually it was as a result of my son-in-law who gave me that suggestion. And the idea is that the diesel that goes into trucks will self-ignite at 210 degrees Celsius. And what was so powerful with that analogy is that the Canadian government put so much pressure under Canadians that there was indeed a self-ignition of the populace, of individuals who were suffering so much under this experience, that they literally exploded into protesting with the trucker convoy came to represent that and so forth. And in this book, I outline why it's so important for us to see this convoy that came to Ottawa. And this book primarily deals with the experience in Ottawa and what it stood for. And so there's another book that needs to be written about other areas, and in particular, the whole experience of the Coots Four and others. But the idea that you could come together and you could have a protest and that it would be peaceful. Now, the mainstream media will tell you that it wasn't peaceful. You know, it was violent. They were blowing horns and all the rest of it and that kind of thing. But for those of us who were literally in Ottawa, and I was up there over two weekends, we saw a very different experience than what the mainstream media was talking about. But what I want us to talk about here now is, okay, so we've come through this experience. So what can we learn? What are the lessons that NCI has learned and has put together for Canadians? And what, as we step back and we look at it, and you know, one of the neat things I am proud to say is that as I was writing the book and I was going through, you know, taking a very strong stance about the lack of constitutional right, as it were, the unconstitutionality of the invocation of the Emergencies Act, the fact that he didn't even meet the definition, despite what Justice Rouleau was saying in the Public Order Emergency Commission and all the rest, and Justice Mosley came out and said, hey, this was not only unconstitutional, you didn't even meet the threshold, et cetera, et cetera. And that should give us all pause, as there is now you know, a federal court decision. Now it's under appeal and all the rest, and it'll be making its way, no doubt, to the Supreme Court of Canada. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. As you mentioned earlier, that Chief Justice Wagner had come out and, you know, let his views be known before it would even end up in court. It'll be interesting to see what happens at the Supreme Court, how that story unfolds, because it's a drama to watch. But what are the lessons that you see? I mean, I've got 16 items in here that I talk about, but I'm wanting to just kind of ask you about your experience and what you think the lessons are for us as we go forward in this country.
You know, I have to say that I've been puzzling about that. Having been one of the authors of this report, you know, this huge compendium of what happened in Canada, and it touched every single aspect of our society. It tore at the fabric of who we are as a people. And you have a tendency when you're considering something of such broad proportions of focusing on those things that perhaps affected you directly, those things at the top that are shiny, and those things at the top that are easy. You know, we can blame it on the government, we can blame it on the doctors, we can blame it on this. But the fundamental thing that has come to my mind on this is that we are to blame. You know, when you have elections in this country and 55% of the people vote, and those are good elections, folks. When you talk about municipal elections, you get less than 10% of the electorate showing up to vote. You mean, and I have to say, and you know, I my background is not you know, it's construction, and I speak plainly. And I want the Canadian people to understand me plainly. This happened because we allowed it to happen. You know, I've been traveling across the country now for over a year, talking to thousands of people. I get hundreds of emails a day, literally. And I've discovered that people first don't understand their political system. They don't participate in it. They've allowed themselves to be convinced that they don't matter, and nothing could be further from the truth. And I can prove that with numbers. I'm an engineer, folks, and I've analyzed provincial elections in Saskatchewan, Alberta, and Manitoba, and they're all the same. And so when people go to school board meetings because they don't like a book that was in the library, and they're waving signs and whatnot, where are they when there's a by-election for a school trustee? We're fighting with this now in Manitoba. We had a school trustee that was, in my opinion, illegally thrown out, she wasn't thrown out. She was essentially attacked in the press and in public, tortured until she finally had to leave the position. And now we're trying to get, you know, the people have been complaining and they're going to school board meetings, but no one wants to run for the by-election. You know, we had school board by-elections in a city called Brandon in Manitoba in the fall, and the turnout was 10%. So if you were to put a toddler in a candy store and leave them there for a few hours, do you think the toddler would kind of go and have some candy? But you've let these corrupt political parties and their corrupt cronies in government and the bureaucracy alone in the candy store for decades. You know, I was shocked, Barry, to find out. I gave a speech a month or two ago in somewhere, and I was talking about ridings. And I swear to you, 50% of the people had a blank look on their face and didn't know what a riding was. So I said, well, a constituency. They didn't know what that was. So I had to draw a map and explain what a constituency it was and what a riding was. Now, my question to you is, what are we teaching in schools? Yeah. We're not teaching history. We're not teaching civics. And people would rather sit at home and watch the same darn episode of Gilligan's Island than go out and participate in the political process. And so then you get the situation that we had in Canada and frankly, most of the Western world that occurred in the last 3 or 4 years.
No, that's a very astute observation, and it's certainly sobering. I think it's very few people are willing to get into the arena that Teddy Roosevelt talked about. You know, it's not the one who's basically sitting down and just being the armchair politician, but it's the person who's actually getting into the public arena. And yes, he may make mistakes, and yes, he may say something that, you know, he'll have to retract or whatever. But no, he's out there trying to make a difference. And I think it behooves everyone who's listening to us right now to do something. If you see that there's something going on in society and that the local politician is not doing their job, do something about it. Run yourself. And I think this is extremely important. I love this because if there's ever a time for us to basically get up out of the chair and get out there, and yes, it's going to be difficult, but we need to show a bit of backbone and a bit of courage. And that's not to be putting other people down and all the rest of it. I know myself, I ran once for a member of parliament many years ago at the time of Canadian Alliance. I was a Canadian Alliance candidate in the city of Oshawa at the time, back in 2000. And yeah, it was not the most pleasant experience I've had in life. And many people say, well, you know, why don't you run again and all the rest of it? But it took a toll. There's no question about it. But we need more people to get out there and say, hey, do something. I love that book that Preston Manning wrote there a little while ago. It was called Do Something. And he gave like a whole bunch of do somethings. And I think that's an important message.
Well, you know, there's so many facets to that. I mentioned that being an engineer, I analyzed the numbers, and I can tell you in Manitoba, there's 57 provincial ridings. So there's 57 representatives in the provincial legislature. And, 14 of those in the last two elections were decided by vote difference of less than 1,000, some 100. And in those ridings or those constituencies, there's 15,000 eligible voters, 7,500 vote. Can you imagine the power that you would have if you could target those 14 constituencies? And by the way, there's another 15 of them that went for less than 2,000 votes. So can you imagine the power that you have if you went into those constituencies and wrangled up 500 voters who didn't vote the last decade and say to the candidate, we don't care if your armband is red or blue or green. If you don't represent us, we will vote you out in the next election. And by the way, here's what we want, and we're monitoring you for the next 4 years. And, that might sound complex, but it's really not. One of the things that the National Citizens Inquiry, at least for me, it was like the canary in the coal mine. I'm like probably a lot of Canadians and weren't really paying that much attention politically. But when I saw what happened and was documented in the NCI testimonies, we created a group here in Manitoba, and there's dozens, if not thousands, of groups across Canada that are forming that are holding politicians to account. And the group we started here is called ManitobaStrongerTogether.ca. And it's not about donations, and it's not about selling branded t-shirts. As a matter of fact, our group, there's no, you don't pay a registration fee. We don't accept donations, none. We don't sell branded t-shirts. All we're doing is creating community and educating people. And we're creating these, if you want to call them, voting blocks in these key constituencies in order to shape the government that we're getting. And this is amazing. We're working within the system, but we're pushing aside the parties, because folks, if you do this once in one constituency, the parties get the message. All of a sudden, their power is gone. If you're telling them, we don't care if you're a NDP or a Liberal or a Conservative, we just want you to represent us, and they're not representing us, they're gone. You've just destroyed that party politic that we've been, that's so sick. You know, it's party politics in Canada and the United States, for that matter, are like the shell and pea game. You know, yeah. It doesn't matter which cup you choose or which shell you choose. The pea ain't there because all those parties are in collusion with each other. There's differences, but they're in collusion. Mm-hmm. And look what happened during COVID. Did the Conservatives come out and protest what the Liberals and the NDP were doing? Nope. As a matter of fact, I met with one of the senior Conservative MPs 6 months ago, and I talked to him about it. He was very open with me, and he said there were five MPs in the Conservative Party in Ottawa that protested, and they were all punished. They were all backbenched. Yeah. So do you think that the next party is going to apologize and start to heal this when they were such a part of it? Mm. You know, nobody in government has officially approached the National Citizens Inquiry. And, you know, we talked earlier that this report is unique. It's never been done before in the world. It was paid for by Canadians. It stands as the largest repertoire of sworn testimony of victims of the mandates and the vaccines and all of the things that they did to. And yet not a single government has come forward and recognized it. CBC, our national broadcaster, did one, I think it was a 10-second blurb on the radio, I think, when we were traveling the country. Don't you think that was important when it's never been done before in the world? Don't you think it's important when we've got, like, I don't know the number, it's somewhere between 20 and 30 million interactions on our website right now. That's just the website, not including Rumble and YouTube and Twitter and all those other things I don't even know anything about. And yet, you know, it's a funny thing, and I'll shut up for a moment and I'll let you get it worded edgewise here, is we had a lady who testified, and she was a CBC reporter who quit over the CBC coverage. She had 34 years of experience, I believe. And one of the things, or some of the things that she said, was that the CBC, when she brought forward a story, she was in the community for many 30 some odd years, and a CBC investigative reporter. And she had,
and who was this? Who's
this? This was Marianne Kloack.
Okay.
And she had people in the community coming to her saying, listen, I'm hearing this and I'm hearing that, and I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should get my children vaccinated or not. So she did a number of news articles about it, you know, showing both sides of the argument, and the CBC quashed it. And as a matter of fact, they did more than that. Instead of doing any kind of reasonable coverage, they took this reporter, squished her story, didn't give it any airtime, and they sent her out to investigate a grasshopper infestation somewhere in Winnipeg. And that story went national at a time when our government's, in my opinion, executing its citizens and destroying our economy and our whole fabric of society. How crazy is that?
Yeah. And of course, you know, a lot of people would look back and they say, well, you know, governments weren't malicious. They weren't, they had the good intentions of trying to protect people. Well, if they were wanting to protect people, why weren't they allowing people to have the freedom of speech and discussion instead of labeling them as, conspiracy theorists and, how do we tolerate these people, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the lies and deception were so widespread. We had a lady, I'll never forget it. Her name was Scarlett Martin, and she was one of the highest paramedic positions you can get in the Toronto area. And she told the story. First, she lost her job over it because she refused to get, I don't know if she refused to get the vaccine or she refused to tell them that she had had the vaccine or not. Remember, we used to have privacy of our medical information. In any case, she testified under oath that she was on a call. She was her shift, her and her partner's shift in the ambulance was coming to a close, and they were going back to the station. And there was an alert that came out over the radio. And there was this is not a story for little children. So if you've got them, put your hands over their ears right now. But so the call was that there was a jumper on the building, the roof of a building, who was going to commit suicide. Mm. So rather than leave and go off shift, her and her partner decided to attend along with some of the other ambulances that attended. Well, this person did jump off the building, and I think she told me it was a 14-story building, and so you can imagine there wasn't a lot left. Well, the other ambulance attendants swabbed what was left, tested it for COVID, and it was deemed a COVID death. She testified to that under oath. Oh my. Yep. So this insanity, it wasn't just at the upper government levels, you know, it's a really interesting study, you know, it trickled down, to quote Mr. Reagan, it trickled down to all levels of our society where people were doing, on the face of it, insane things. And it was all due to this, it proves the power of coercion and, and, you know, 24/7 propaganda. It's, it was an interesting, it's an interesting story. You know, I often tell the story. I'm old enough that when I was a small boy, I was raised on a farm in rural Manitoba, and it was a specialty farm. It was a mink ranch, and a mink ranch is a very difficult business. And so the people who would come and work on our farm for us were generally immigrants from Germany, because we had a lot of immigration from Germany after the war. And so I got to know those people. You know, in school, I was learning about how horrible the Nazis were and whatnot. And yet I knew these people firsthand, these wonderful German people who were kind and loving. And I always, all my life, asked the question, how did that happen? How did they take these good people who I've known all my life, and they became this mindless, accepting horde? And that's what happened in Canada. Mm-hmm. That is the power of propaganda. It is the power of propaganda with another 100 years on top of it from what they did in Nazi Germany in the 1930s. And that might, some people will be dismissive about that. But it's true. You know, we had testimony at the National Citizens Inquiry that was just heartbreaking. We got testimony of one elderly gentleman who had, I think it was COPD or some cancer in his lungs. He couldn't wear a mask. And he went into the Canadian Tire and he got assaulted by the managers on film. He's suing them, by the way. And then the RCMP came in and beat the heck out of him too. He's suing the RCMP. We had a lady in, I think she was in Saskatoon or Red Deer. She was, I apologize to her if she sees this, but I believe she was in her 80s, and she had been in the hospital, and she just got a diagnosis of terminal cancer. She's all on her own. She stumbles out of the hospital. You know, she obviously is not in great health, and she went to a park bench and she sat there, and she couldn't wear a mask, and she had her mask off, and she was weeping to herself. You know, how would you react with that news? And people were attacking her outside for not having a mask on. And a radio station in Saskatoon allegedly attacked her on air. That was the level of hate and fear that the government on purpose cultivated in the Canadian people.
And unfortunately, in my view, that experience that we had back then is an experience that we may very well face in the very short future if the online harms bill, Bill C-63, finds its way to being passed. Now, many lawyers and academics have said, well, there's no way that bill is going to pass in its current form. But I beg to differ in the sense that we're living in a time where the ideology of those in power are such that they will in all likelihood, I fully expect it to be passed, and I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of changes. But part of that that bill is the idea that those who will be filing complaints, basically we're going to be creating a bit of a snitch society again, where the complainants, when they file the complaints that, you know, people online have been involved in hatred, that they will be entitled, should they be successful in getting a conviction against the individual or individuals, that they will be getting $20,000 or could get a $20,000 order, and the government itself getting $50,000. Anyhow, I've had a number of conversations on this already, but it just strikes me that we saw what would happen when you have an acceptable narrative that everybody who's anybody must accept. And then now we're going to be using harm, hatred. And of course, hatred will be defined. And yes, there is, you know, in the legislation and in the courts, you know, they've got a definition of hatred, you know, detestation, vilification, and so forth, that's going to likely to cause, you know, some violence or whatever. But the reality is that that is going to depend upon the trier of fact or the individual who's going to be pushing it in this new bureaucratic digital safety commission and digital safety ombudsperson. And it's going to be their inclination as to what hatred is. And that is what's going to be pushed out on the media. That's what's going to be pushed out in the bureaucracy. And we're going to have another situation where it seems to me that we got this fear-based lack of communication, lack of dialogue, lack of reasonableness. And we have no idea what we're in for in the coming days. And I think what gets me, and I think what's important for the NCI or and its testimonies and its experiences is, look, these are what people experienced under that short 20 to 23, 3 years. But what are we going to face in the future? And if the past is any indication, we're going to see a similar kind of experience, and it's going to be horrendous. And especially when the government, as it's shown a proclivity to spend money as if it's water coming out of Niagara Falls, and creating this new bureaucratic bureaucracy, like we're into, you know, lots of things for us to say, hey, you know, what are we going to do? And so anyhow, it can be very depressing. But I think what we need to be thinking about now is, how do we deal with this? How is it that we can get out of this cycle of our leaders pushing us to a particular ideological position, having the media involved? What do we do? How do we do it? And I love the concept you said last time, was the idea that, you know, we're all at fault. But let's put some meat on that. We want to give our people who are listening some hope here that we can do something with all of this.
Yeah.
Positive. Oh,
absolutely. And just before we leave C-63, one of the scariest, one of the scariest things in that law is, and it is a trend that's been going on in our governments for a long time now, where they pass legislation which sort of frames an issue, and then they create a bureaucracy or a regulatory board who can write regulations, and these people are not elected. And so they pile on all kinds of regulations, which is done in the back room, and you don't see it because it's not being debated in Parliament. It's being done in these regulatory bodies that they're setting up, and in particular in C-63. So that's really scary. But, you know, we have to, the lesson here from what happened in the last 3 years is the that we have to acknowledge that public apathy towards the erosion of these fundamental institutions and beliefs were one of the largest factors that enabled the imposition of all of this tyrannical measures. You know, if people would stand up and say, no, wait a minute. If you're going to pass a law, I want to know what that law is. I don't want you to say, well, this is the general guideline and this regulatory board over here of unelected cronies of ours is just going to set down these rules year after year after year. We have to stop that. And the way to stop that is join some of those organizations that are out there that have come up, you know. Take Back Alberta is one. Manitoba Stronger Together is another one. You know, Manitoba Stronger Together is hosting a national conference in Winnipeg in June 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. And it's for people, it's not for democracy groups or Canadian patriot groups to meld together in one. No, that's not what it is. It's to bring together all of these people who are concerned about the direction our country's going and to get them to meet each other, to get them to talk about, well, you know, we're having this problem. Have you faced this? Can you help me with that? Getting to know the people, you know, when you meet somebody face to face and you have a conversation with them, a lot of the division, you know, the division that we see happening in Canada with a lot of these groups that are really pulling on the same rope, but they start to fight amongst each other. That wouldn't occur if we could get folks together. So there is a movement in this country now where people are starting to realize that, you know, they have to turn off the TV for an hour or two a night. And you know, it's interesting. I travel the country now and I give speeches and I'll never forget this. It was a lesson for me in a few different ways. And I beg forgiveness of this lady if she hears me, and I'm not doing it justice, but I'd given this speech in a small town in rural Manitoba. And after I was done, I was talking about all these things about, you know, democracy and how you can actually do something and how you can make things count. And this little lady came up to me, and I want to say a little old lady, but I'm getting a little long in the tooth myself, and she's probably younger than me. And I didn't think anybody was listening. And she said to me, Mr. Drysdale, I really want to be a part of this, but I don't have a computer and I don't have computer skills and I can't do this and I can't do that. And it was all I can'ts. And I don't know where this came from. I looked her in the eye and I said to her, I bet you know how to bake cinnamon buns, don't you? And she looked at me and the people who were milling around talking, they stopped and I didn't notice it. So other people told this to me. And I said, I bet you bake the best cinnamon buns in town. And she goes, yeah, I do. And I said, well, I tell you what, next time we come to town or next time we have a town hall meeting, you let everybody know you're bringing your homemade cinnamon buns. And I'll bet you we'll double the attendance in the hall. And you know, as silly as that sounds, in our organization, we travel all over. And when we come to these towns and we have packed rooms, there's always a half a dozen ladies that have made homemade cinnamon buns because they want to attract as many people as they can. And for those of you who maybe want to look at that in a different way, you know, I'm not a biblical scholar by any stretch of the imagination, but we've all heard the story of the loaves and the fishes. And you know, people talk about Jesus's role in that, and they talk about the role of the boy, but no one ever says who made that lunch and sent it with the boy.
Right.
Maybe you're not standing up in front of 500 people or 10,000 people, but maybe you're in the background. Maybe you're talking to that person in line at Costco. And I don't mean trying to feed somebody with a funnel. I mean, what about if you're standing in line at Costco and you say to the person, I've been hearing a lot about this C63, or I heard about this National Citizens Corps. Do you know anything about it? And maybe they do and maybe they don't. But maybe that's your role. You know, not all of us can stand in front of 10,000 people and speak, but everyone's got a voice. Everyone can do something. And if you understand the strength of that, you know, keep in mind what I was saying earlier about how these elections, these provincial elections are so, that the control on power is so tenuous. Yeah. And you know, if you listen to the press, they tell you something completely different. It's an incredible thing. That an amazing thing happened in Manitoba this past fall. We had a provincial election in October, and I talked a little bit about it earlier. But the press told you at the end that the reason we had a sitting conservative government, and now we have an NDP government. And if you listen to the press, the people were so mad at the PCs and they voted them out. But that's not what happened. The progressive conservatives lost 8% of the vote they had in the previous election. But what happened was, and I still haven't been able to get anybody to explain this to me, the Green Party, who had 35,000 votes in the previous election, and they were growing every single election, went from 35,000 to like 3,000 votes. And the Liberals did the same thing, almost, not quite as bad. So I approached the Greens Party leader several times by email, by phone call, and they don't want to talk about it. So when you're sitting at home and you're not looking at the numbers, or maybe you don't have that ability to look at the numbers, and you don't understand that, because the press is lying to you, and they can lie to you if they know you're not going to look into it, and the information's there, folks. But what it comes down to is the people understanding that they really do have the power. You know, I give the speech, and I inevitably, and I'm not criticizing anybody. You know, you do what you want to do. Some people like spaghetti. Some people like steak. You know, we all have different tastes. But I'll give a speech like this, and I'll inevitably have somebody sitting in the back who's just on the edge of their chair. And then they come steaming up to me at the end and they want to talk about the BNA Act. And I always say to them, well, you might be right, but what can you do about that? And then I turn to the crowd and I say, does anybody here have the money or power to challenge the BNA Act? Or do you know how to do it? But how many of you know how to vote? And that's what we need to do, you know. And we have to pay special attention to the sinister role that the public and private broadcasters in this country played, you know, in terrorizing the public. They acted as mouthpieces for the government. And the reason they did that is they used our tax dollars. You know, the according to the Frontier Center, the Winnipeg Free Press, which is one of the biggest newspapers in Western Canada, over 50% of their operating budget comes from the government.
Right. Yeah. No matter how much they want to deny that has any influence on their coverage, it just loses credibility right on the face of it. You know, it's just
you're right, and you know, people who say stop talking about this is over. January 15th, 2024, the Winnipeg Free Press ran with an article that fantasized about how those idiots who didn't get vaccinated should be dead, and they'll be celebrating on their tombstones. They actually published an editorial like that. And our group, the Manitoba Stronger Together group, not only went after the newspaper directly and complained, but we went after their advertisers. And guess what? We got a written apology. But it wasn't because we complained to the editor. We did that. But we wrote letters to their advertisers, and we told them, we're not going to do business with you if this is what you're supporting. And you know what? In the defense of the advertisers, they had no idea that the Winnipeg Free Press had written such a thing. But for those of you who think it's over, it ain't over.
Yes.
Until we say it is, until we stand up and start using the system the way it was always meant to be used, or at least the way we were told it was meant to be used.
Yeah. Yeah, the importance of checks and balances are just absolutely crucial if we are to survive as a society. You know, Ken, I see our time is going again, but I do want you to stick around for just one more chat. I want to talk about some of the macro ideas here, and one in particular. To me, I'm just going to throw this out there and see what you think about it, but the more I look at what has happened, and the more I wrote this book on the trucker convoy and so forth, and just kind of stepping back and trying to make sense of what we've experienced and what we are currently experiencing, I can't help but think that there's a metaphysical, there's a philosophical, there's a spiritual side to this that I think a lot of people are not really talking about a whole lot, but it strikes me that the the understandings of virtue and so forth that we have had in the past are not there right now. And no matter what people talk about, when they say, oh, you know, we're secular, you know, we don't have a particular belief about this, that, and the other thing. But the reality is, in my view, is that everybody has a belief in something. And so maybe we might want to explore that next time. So what is your coordinates for people to find out more about the work that you're doing? And I look forward to having a further chat on this matter.
You can go to the National Citizens Inquiry website. That's www.nationalcitizensinquiry.ca. And if you want to learn more about the action group that we formed, it's www.manitobastrongertogether.ca. And you can email me there, as a matter of fact. There's a contact email there. It's kendrysdale@manitobastrongertogether.ca. So, you know, the National Citizens Inquiry is the canary in the coal mine. And the Manitoba Stronger Together is what we're doing to take action. So, you know, we don't want to just talk about all the terrible things that happen and you go home depressed and have a nightmare tonight, but we're giving you a solution and a roadmap to a solution.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, listen, thanks again for coming and being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Well, folks, I want to thank you for taking the time as we carry on with our conversation. And we're going to have yet at least one more chance to talk. And this time we're going to talk about a more deeper philosophical, religious even, concept of what is going on in Canada today from a spiritual sense. And what is it that we have been experiencing over the last number of years? And I think there's something in here that a lot of people are starting to wake up to, and certainly one that I've noticed when I was walking among the trucker convoy, listening to the street preachers. And in my book, I just like to remind you of it, 210 degrees Celsius, 16 ways that the truckers ignited Canada for the long haul. And I think that the experience of the what the truckers did, and I think it's having an impact because for a number of reasons that I could get into. One is the fact that it was a very nonviolent, and it was indeed a party atmosphere when we went up in Ottawa and met with people who said, you know, enough is enough. But at the same time, they were just so happy to see that they weren't alone as they were going through the struggle of those very dark times in this country. So I invite you to make sure that you stay tuned for next time. And until then, I'm Barry Bussey.
All the great things are simple, Churchill said, and many can be expressed in a single word: freedom, justice, honor, duty, mercy, hope. Freedom, justice, honor, duty, mercy, and hope. Such words will not be remembered as part of the Trudeau's oratory during the COVID crisis. Rather, what will be forever remembered is his vilification of the unvaccinated.